It's Wednesday, the 3rd of January, and you're listening to the Red Army Rounder. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Happy New Year, Paul.
Merry Christmas, Paul.
And a happy Christmas and Merry New Year to all of our listeners. Happy Christmas and a Merry New Year. That's the way we're saying it these days. We're back after a bit of an extended break to look back over the festive period doubleheaders against Coventry and Milton Keynes. Before choosing our player of the week, having a look at the four-man system and the spread of scoring within the Devils team at the moment, before heading over to social media where there's a couple of burning questions that need discussion, and we'll then preview the forthcoming weekend's action. So, kicking straight off back to Boxing Day, and we welcomed, as is tradition, Coventry Blaze into town, and Aaron, it was something of a novelty in recent seasons to have such a tight game against Coventry, and for me it was good to see that tight game, even if it did make for quite a heart-pounding experience.
Yeah, it was, like you said, really nerve-wracking. I think I come up to the Red Army travel desk after the second intermission and I was just like, not convinced we're going to win this. I was really taken back, and I didn't think we had the bottle to win it. And if you go on previous records, like previous to our streak, we wouldn't have had the bottle and we wouldn't have gone on to win it. But thank God for Joey Haddad and Ben Bounds, otherwise we would have been stuffed.
Exactly, yeah. And as I mentioned, the bottle having gone 2-0 up through a couple of power play goals to be pegged back. I was feeling the same nerves as you. The goal in peace in the third, meaning that we ran all the way through to penalties. And one of the longest shootouts I've seen in a while, with eight shooters on each team. But as you said, Aaron, Devils seemed to try a couple of different players. For Joey, your dad had one success and bounced back and did it again. But a bit of controversy on the Ryan Dingle penalty. What was your take on that one?
I didn't like it. And, it looked like he lost the puck before he done the shoot. And I think it's a rule in hockey that if you lose control of the puck at any time in your shootout attempt, then the shot is considered over. So I wasn't happy about it. But Joey, like you could say the same about Joey Haddad's first goal. It come off the crossbar, bounced down. And eventually did go in, but
a little bit of controversy on both sides, but yeah. that one's the ref's got to give it, I think. But yeah, it was interesting. It looks like I was quite far from the shot. It actually looked as if Bams had saved it and he tapped the rebound in, which,
yeah,
having thought I saw that, I did kind of get quite angry. But yeah, he sort of seemed to fan on a shot, which could be. You're only allowed one shot, so if he's considered a proper shot, then shouldn't have been allowed. But yeah, as you said, it was all immaterial with Joey Haddad stepping up for the second time. Sean, I can't remember seeing Haddad take a penalty shot previously. Can you remember? Because it's something I think we'd probably like to see again now.
I, from memory, don't recall seeing Joey Haddad take penalty shots. We've had for the last, two seasons that I can remember, we've definitely had our set up shooters. And in the past, I don't ever recall Haddad taking them either. So, no, I think that we can, like you said, we can expect to see it going forward.
Yeah, two excellently taken penalty shots. So the Devils took a shootout win. Keep that winning streak going. Heading up to Coventry the next night. And yet another tight and cagey game. I have to give credit. He's a guy who gets a lot of stick, but Danik Paquette put Coventry in the lead with an absolute quality goal. In the second period, Gleeson Fournier did what Gleeson Fournier does with another coast to coast.
Coast to coast.
He'd gone a couple of weeks without one, so I think he just thought, wow, better do it again, hadn't I? Paquette regave Coventry the lead with another really good goal, and His penalty shot the night before was quite amusing. He took quite a bit of stick for that, and he plays the pantomime villain, you know, with the crowd quite a bit as well. But you know, definitely flashes of his genius there. Before Aslin and Hotham, with two quick fire goals, gave Devils again another tight 3-2 win. Really enjoyed going to Coventry with a game that was that tight. There was a decent crowd in it. It's not the atmosphere of old in Coventry, but it was a bit better. It must have been at least 300 Devils fans there. We oversold the two blocks, so we ended up sitting in the drummer seats for a little while because they got sold, which didn't get mentioned to drummers at all. Strange one, Sean, that Coventry seemed really poor. But do you think it's a sign of them finding form, or do we just catch them on a good weekend?
I think we got them on a good weekend. Coventry are point blank, they're just not a very good side. I think we beat them when they were at their best, and I don't think we were we weren't out of this world. We probably could have performed better, and we still beat a side that was at the top of their game. And for me, that says a lot. They saved their two best games probably of the season for us, and they still couldn't beat us. You know, they run us close. You know, fair play to them, but again, not when we've been at our best, and it just still wasn't good enough for them to beat us. You know, they took 1 point out of the four. I saw a couple of Coventry fans saying that they were really encouraged by what they'd seen, and that, you know, it was hopefully a sign of things to come. And then after that, they seemed to be back to their doom and gloom. So that's nice to see. Overall, I think they caught us on a bad weekend, and we caught them on a really good weekend. That's my view on it, to be honest with you.
Fair enough. And well, after Coventry, we moved on to a team that have already caused us problems this year, turning us over in their rink in the Challenge Cup, where we welcomed Milton Keynes on the 30th. Devils raced into a 4-0 lead in this one, Sean, but Kearney and Doucette made things a little bit interesting for the second half of the second and the third period. To finish 6-3 on the night, I felt, if anything, that potentially flattered Milton Keynes a little bit. What was your take on the game?
Yeah, I definitely think so as well. I think we eased off it. Really good to see a timeout used properly. We're basically bossing the game. We take our foot off the gas. Kearney gets one on a breakaway. A great breakaway goal as well. I think that he sold Bounds. You know, Bounds had to go and look for his jockstrap. It was a great move from Kearney to just completely pull him out of position and shoot on an open net. Then Doucette adds one from poaching around the crease. And we sort of get a bit panicky and think, we've given away a 4-goal lead before this year. I think it was 4-5.
Yes, yeah.
And so, you know, then, you know, Andrew Lord sort of thinks, you know, let's just, you know, slow things down, take a minute, regain our composure and get back to our best. And we did. And Hotham, you know, stretches the lead.
And to be fair, less than a minute after the timeout as well, which, as you said, is always a good sign for a coach that, you know, the shift after a timeout is a shift that makes a bit of a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, going into the break with a 3-goal lead, you just sort of think, okay, there's 20 minutes left. As long as we don't let ourselves get that flat-footed again, give Milton Keynes a break. Because on the break, they're a reasonably good side. If they give them their breaks, they're going to punish you because they're a good offensive scoring team. But overall, you knew that if we just clicked it back up to our regular standards, we weren't, you know, sloppy with the puck, didn't turn it over, make mistakes, weren't too complacent, that we were going to beat them. And ultimately, we did.
Yes, yeah. But still an enjoyable game. One of my favourite parts was Verrall Paul's tantrum in and complete lack of understanding of how a 2+2 penalty works. That if you score on the first one, you still have to sit in the bend for the second one. Even though that did lead to the shorthanded goal, the second one. But waving his arms around in the penalty box cheered me up.
Also, as well, I just want to point out that it was good to actually score a great rig of goals against Mika Vigman.
Yeah.
Normally, when he was at Nottingham, was basically a thorn in our side for the most part, and we couldn't beat him. And I know he hasn't quite got the defence that he did in Nottingham, but still nice to, you know, throw a good couple on him and make him not want to play in the next game.
Yeah, and play he didn't on maybe overindulged on New Year's Eve, and the backup Jordan Headley got his, I think, first ever Elite League start. Probably not what you want heading against top of the table team on a 12-game winning streak. But start he did, and Sean, you made the trip up for, well, on the webcast, on paper, a comfortable and comprehensive 5-0 victory.
5-0 flat at Milton Keynes. Put it that way.
Wow.
Yeah, really. We just tore them to pieces. Absolutely torn to pieces. When we took a 2-goal lead and then Joey had got a 5+ game, I did sort of think that, you know, a 5-minute major, anything can happen. You can score 2, 3, 4 goals on a 5-minute major if you're at your best. And I thought that may let Milton Keynes back into the game. But as soon as we killed it, the game was done. You know, we had all the momentum of scoring twice in the first, killing a 5-minute major, and we just absolutely ran rings around Milton Keynes.
That 5 minutes pretty much was the first 5 minutes of the second period, which, you know, for me, I felt like it was terrible timing as well, that you've got a minute, you're a full period break of coaching to run into it, and I'm sure they would be gutted that it was only 20 seconds in, they took a penalty on it, which...
Yeah, Hudson, yeah, which obviously reduced that to obviously only having 3 minutes of major penalty time. Yeah.
It was a nice relief, but yeah, like you said, and even watching on the webcast, just felt like the game was done at that point, but I have to give special mention to literally... I've been told he was a backup, but it was one of the most uninspiring commentaries I've ever heard. And I think he managed to get about half of the team's name wrong. We had two...
Went two of them called Foreigner.
Yeah, we had Justin Foreigner and Gleeson Foreigner playing for us. But I think number four, Andrew Lord, was my favourite bit of the commentary. The guy who wasn't even playing.
We had Hot Ham.
Bentivo.
But yeah, there was no G in Bentivoglio. Is there a G in Bentivoglio?
There is a G in Bentivoglio.
It's a silent G.
On and Bichonette for Morissette was
it was
like a murdering of names. It was quite a run of them.
It was quite hilarious.
which I think is like potentially where like the dominance I don't think necessarily shone through on the webcast. Interesting to hear from you in the rink that that was potentially a flattering score, and that's always a good sign if you win a game 5-0. And it's making the opponents look good. So, that was a good bit of
fun. Our scoring looked fantastic. You know, fair play to Jordan Headley. He did track a lot of shots. We threw a lot of rubber on him, and he saved what he could see for the most part. And we just tore it up basically. Good first trip to Milton Keynes for me. Really, really like their rink, and it was good fun.
Yeah, your first one. You obviously weren't sat too far back in the stands because. You didn't have the pillars getting in the way.
I stood at the glass, which was also very fun. I haven't stood at the glass for a long time, so that was good fun. A bit dark in there.
Yeah, I was wondering. I had meant to ask you, not online, but it is one of the darkest rinks I've ever been in, and wondered whether it was like a lighting problem. But that's obviously just the way they decide to light a hockey game.
They
have a Papa John's, so. They have a Papa John's, but it's a very slow Papa John's. So. Just as a word of warning to anyone going to Milton Keynes on the 10th of February.
My diet is far, far superior than meeting the levels. As low as Papa John's.
Had a McDonald's beforehand, did you?
Yes.
That was the Christmas period, and that's the Devils on a 13-game winning streak. Which, if you think of, the conversation we're having on here, the conversations people are having at the rink, social media, at the end of November...
Just a quick one as well. Talking about the Milton Keynes game, Justin Farina's goal was simply a thing of beauty.
Do you want to quote what you said about it, Sean? Simply.
It was simply lovely.
Yeah, and Farina's scoring, top goal scorer at the moment in the team, but scoring some nice goals when he does as well. So, yeah, really good to see. So, four games in a row over Christmas, 13 on the bounce in the league. Things aren't bad, so there's got to be plenty of players to choose from for Player of Christmas. Aaron, who is going to get your vote?
I think we noticed it earlier. I think we discussed it off here. I'm going to go with Sean Bentolio, as they call him up in Minton Keynes. Score, I think it was 11 points in 5 games. Some games he had 4 points, other games he had 3. He just absolutely killed it over Christmas. Didn't really put a foot wrong in the games that I saw. We've discussed it since the beginning of the season. He's a different player off compared to last season. Just been absolutely fantastic, really. So, Merry Christmas to Sean Bentivoglio, and well done. He was my favourite.
Sean, who gets your votes?
Yeah, Sean Bentivoglio for me. As Aaron said, 11 points in 5 games. Against Milton Keynes, you got 3 points in each game, and 4 in the win against Dundee. I think he's been fantastic over Christmas. Completely different player this year. Fair play to Sean Bentivoglio, my player of Christmas.
Yeah, and it is a unanimous one. Special mention, Gleeson Forney and Andrew Hotham, I thought, particularly were excellent, but that you probably could have picked 2/3 of the team and you'd be hard pushed to give an argument against them. Everyone's playing well, but as standout players, I think that you could make an argument for that many of them. But Sean Bentivoglio, he has been fantastic all year, and he's been reunited with Lane Olmer. He's been firing for a while, but both seem to have really found their groove together that they never really did last year. So it's good to see those two together and firing as well. So congratulations to Sean Bentivoglio, who is the Player of Christmas. So onward, and the Milton Keynes game was the first league game for the Devils this season that saw the 4-man officiating system. Obviously, Sean would be the best place to talk about how it worked there. I know we've discussed previously that I think we all unanimously thought it was a good move for the league. The game in Milton Keynes, Sean, did see a high number of penalties from the webcast, the ones that I could see. I found it hard to disagree with them, but was it the type of game or was it down to the 4-man system that was happening?
No, I think it was just the type of game, and I do think that all the penalties that were given, I was hard pressed to disagree with. I think there was one, I think in the third period where Matthew Myers just basically lost a battle on the boards, lost a bit of an edge, went down, and I think it was Hogarth gave a cross check in Minor, which was, complete and utter balderdash. But on the whole, a very, very well called game. I think it's down to style as well. I think Tom Darnell is one of those referees where, I think it's hard to sort of get those two referees to do a game together. I just don't think that those two particularly would mesh well, Hogarth and Darnell, but they're obviously two fairly local to that rink, which on New Year's Day is perfect for the league. I think you'll see different combinations that will work better. I don't think those are two that, now that they're two lead referees, I think that's probably the issue there, is that although Tom Darnell is the senior referee, I feel like they've both done enough games themselves for such a long time that working as a tandem between them probably didn't work as you'd like to see from a fan's perspective. But now you've got new guys like Chris Wells, Matt Rose coming up to the ranks that when they are with senior referees who've been doing it a lot longer, I think it'll sort of balance out quite well.
Yeah, and I think from my point of view, it's always been four-man system is the off-the-puck incidents in the Coventry game on Boxing Day. Andrew Hotham took an overtime penalty, which was a stupid one to take because he just kept hooking the player till the referee's arm went up. But he was frustrated at being held in his own crease that the ref could see over his shoulder, but couldn't really look at it enough, I think, to make an educated call. But that just doesn't happen with a four-man system. You've got someone at the back that should be picking those up. So hopefully it'll encourage the game to flow. Aaron, for you, there's been some talk online of you know, the fact it's going to increase penalties, that the Elite League already sees too many penalties. Is something you're concerned about, that we're going to see less five-on-five hockey directly as a result of this?
Even if we do, at least it could be a more fairer way to do it. Like, how many times a game do you see the home team or the away team feel like aggrieved because a penalty hasn't gone their way, and or a call that should be made wasn't made, or a call that was made maybe was a little bit easy, you know? So it's going to make the game a lot more fairer. I'm just happy that, you know, you'll see, and maybe with the format system, you'll see a lot more of the refs like communicating with each other. Like, maybe one will think it's a penalty, the other won't think it's a penalty, or they can discuss it and things like that. So, do you know what I mean? It's like, in their essence, it's a learning curve for the new up and coming refs. So all the experience they can get will be brilliant. And yeah, we may shout and bawl at them a couple of times over the next couple of weeks, but it benefits the players, it benefits the fans, and it benefits the league, and it benefits DOPS. So I say it's a great thing. Even if there's more penalties, there's more penalties. I think we'll just have to deal with it. But I love a power play goal anyway. So
that's a good point. You're mentioning that for the next few weeks, that it probably will take some time to adapt, as Sean said, where you've got two lead refs going together. The fact that we've got brand new refs, you know, who haven't refed at this level before, like Matt Rose, Chris Wells stepping up, that there probably will be a few instances. But I remember back when we did have the four-man system, and Adam Keefe lost an edge, and Hogarth in his first season gave a tripping penalty, and as the whistle went, Smith skated over and said, no, he lost an edge. And, you know, all right, there was a whistle that didn't need to happen, but the right result at the end of it. So you know, there are massive benefits to it. And if more penalties get called, the teams that adapt to the way that the games are reffed are going to benefit from it. So,
and as a skilled team, the skilled teams are going to benefit more from it.
Yeah, and as Devils fans, obviously that's what we are this year. I always feel like we're the ones shouting at off the puck instance against us rather than necessarily, and obviously we do it, we're not angels. But yeah, overall, hopefully it'll be a benefit for us, and any adjustment will be a bit easier for us to make. So looking forward to it, and you're looking forward to see it in action in person this coming weekend. Sean, before coming on air, you were discussing the way the Devils are scoring this season, that we're the second highest in the league, but you're not really troubling the scorers at all, the scoreboard.
Yeah, it's I really like the blend of scoring that we've got through the team. You know, myself personally, I've not been particularly impressed with Patrick Aslin this year on the whole. But then you look at his scoring, he's almost into double digits with 9 goals, 12 assists, 21 points and 26. We've got 3 players tied on 11 goals. Joey Martin, Jake Morissette, who's basically a third liner, has got 11 goals. Lane Ulmer, who we said we were waiting to get going again for his post-Christmas, you know, round of scoring and all that sort of thing. He's got 11 goals. Andrew Hotham has 12 from defence. Our leading goal scorer is Justin Farina with 13 in 24 games, which is a goal every other game. And given that he's been he's not playing top 6 minutes that he was in Dundee, I don't think he's played any power play. I can't remember seeing him on a power play shift at all. I'm really encouraged by how well our scoring is spread through the team. Particularly, like, we're talking about these players who we think have underperformed or not quite got going yet, or got the best out of them in Ulmer, Morissette, and they are producing. And Matthew Myers has scored a good couple of goals recently as well. I think having him on the power play has been absolutely massively influential. Our power play has been much better. Our net front presence has been fantastic. I think if you had your pluses and your plus minus for power plays, Matt Myers would be up there with the highest, because we've scored a lot more power play goals and he's been on the ice for a lot of them. just from standing in front of the net, which you obviously don't get assists for, but I think the work that he's putting in is fantastic. Joey, your dad getting back to full fitness. I think he's going to go on a bit of a tear soon, hopefully. So, yeah, I'm just really encouraged by how spread out our scoring options are. You know, you're not banking on Joey Martin to score you a goal when you're down. It can literally come from anywhere.
Yeah, and obviously for other teams having to defend that when you've got at least three lines that are scoring. Where do you put your top defence pairing? It's a moving feast. And I think the biggest shame, and something that we didn't have a podcast after to discuss, was that one game where we saw the line of Farina, Haddad and Crowder just click and get four goals in a period. And you know, that's the last time we've seen Paul Crowder on the ice since, unfortunately. But there's combinations that are even out through injuries at the moment that have proven to be working. So, you know, there's definitely options in the team. And when you think we've been on this 13-game winning run, and you know, with the exception of Andrew Lord, who's stood on the bench as a coach, we're running with a solid set team. We've had at least an import out for all of that. Josh Batch has been injured for the majority of it. Obviously, Craig Moore is out, you know, potentially for the season. It's really hard to call yourselves hard done by with injuries when there's probably not many games where we've iced under our full quota of imports. But you know, for the way the team was set up, we've not been able to do that so far, have we? So really, really promising. And
another little thing I wanted to just mention as well is we talked a couple of weeks ago about we had a burning question regarding Drew Parris and taking away his power play time, and we put Mark Richardson on the power play, and it's clicked again. Mark Richardson is playing well and producing on the power play. Not to say that we were right, but just to prove that you put players who deserve to be there, and they'll reap the rewards of being given the opportunity. And I think that's a really important thing to do, is when our power play isn't going, is to switch it up. And yeah, just wanted to throw that in there. Tom Rutkus has been getting a couple more shifts as well. He looks much more comfortable, causing teams a couple of problems, and really good to see. Really intrigued to see how his development goes down the stretch.
Yeah, so you look very promising pre-season. I think I've been a little disappointed at times at where he's been given shifts. Like, he's been hauled off quite quickly, like almost halfway through shifts at times. Whether that's the way he's being managed at the moment, but he did against Milton Keynes. I think when we were 5-3 up, he was got a couple of power play shifts, which. It's got to be great for a guy that age to be getting power play minutes, regardless of the game situation. It's only going to do good things for his confidence and for his development. So, yeah, it's something to definitely look forward to seeing him develop through the rest of the season, hopefully. All positive news there. Hopefully it keeps running. I think something Aaron said just before we came on air about the winning streak is that it's got to come to an end at a time, but you know, if you've got a good spread of scoring, even if it does, hopefully it's a blip rather than start of a bit of a slump. So that'd be nice. Social media, Sean. Obviously, we've been quite quiet, but luckily our listeners haven't. We've only had one Rahmite, and we're sharing it mainly because it's nice about us. Kenwyn Jones, hating that there's been so little talk of late, and loves the news that we're planning to do more soon, having tweeted yesterday that we were coming back. So, it's the only one we've had over Christmas, but you know, we are back now. Send us your Rahmites, everything that you love, the things that you love, things that you hate, from games and from weekends, or even from the show. We can take it. We're big boys. We won't cry, honest. But we've also had a couple of burning questions, I believe, over Christmas, Sean.
We did, yeah. We had one from Tony Edwards, which says, now that Tyson Strachan has fully settled in, how do you find his contribution to the roster? Paul, do you want to go first on that one?
I've liked Strachan since day one. Day two, I didn't like him so much. His second game in the weekend, he looked a bit slow and got done a couple of times, but I think that's understandable given the start he had as a Cardiff Devil. But he's brilliant. He reminds me of Craig Weller in that he just seems to have forever on the puck. It doesn't matter where he picks up the puck. It doesn't matter what he does. He just seems to turn around and all of a sudden, he stood there on his own, and you think, hang on, we seem to be in trouble a minute ago. You know, he's not I don't think he's got the offensive upside that Weller had in the league as it was that year. I've no doubt that he probably would have if the league was still of that quality. I think for me, he's really brought out the best in Bryce Reddick, which is, you know, an even better thing, because he's settled in, he's playing, you know, really well, and you're deserving of his minutes as well at the moment. Aaron, have you found him?
I think he's brilliant. I think he brought what he was missing at the beginning of the year. He brought that calmness, that composure, you know, the fact that he can just, like Paul said, sitting on the puck for seems like days, and just so calm and collective. You know, he'll sit back in a play just in case a turnover happens. You know, I think he's just a really composed, really experienced, really good player, just that we needed, because we had all our offensive upside coming from the back end. And, you know, we was leaking a couple of goals there because we was getting hit in the breakaway. Now we've got a player that almost takes that yard or two back, sits there, and he's expecting everything, and he doesn't panic. He stays calm. He stays composed, and I think he does everything well. Yeah, he may get a turnover now and then, but I think Tyson Stragan makes his team, but if we didn't have Tyson Stragan or someone to play that role, I don't think we would be where we are in the league standings right now.
That is a good point. And you, do you see him as that critical, Sean?
Yeah, I genuinely do. As Aaron said, if we're put in a situation where we do not want to concede a goal, I'm putting Tyson Stragan out there every single day of the week. So calm and collected, total composure. Like you said, he seems like he's got an extra yard on the puck when someone's pressuring him. He's a much better skater than you'd think for someone of his size. I think the last couple of weeks, I think the system that we play has sort of, he's sort of been a bit more involved in it as well. You will see him as the active defenseman driving down the wing. And getting the puck into the zone, but straight away he's feeding it right into the corner and back to his position, and we're allowed to recycle the puck around the boards. And I really, really like Tyson Stragan. I'd have him back next year in a heartbeat right now. I'd give him a deal for as long as he wants it right now. I think he's one of those guys, from what I hear as well, off the ice, he's fantastic, with regards to community projects and, with the guy, I think he's really well liked amongst the team, and I think that's really important. I think it's good to have that bit of fresh blood and come in and be a voice of calmness when things maybe weren't quite as good as they are now. And I think Aaron is completely right. I don't think we would be where we are without his input, not just on the ice, but as a club overall. I think he's a bit of a leader despite not wearing a letter, and leads by example. I don't think we've seen him have a bad game, to be quite honest with you, and reminds me a little bit of Mark Richardson in that sense. So I think if we had a team full of Mark Richardsons, you'd win nearly every game.
Well, a team full of Mark Richardsons, there is an absolutely lovely team.
Or a team full of Tyson Strachans. A team full of Tyson Strachans. Bring it on.
When you said about not getting scored on, you put Strachan on the ice, it did make me think of a defensive pairing of Strachan and Richardson, and just how solid that would be. That would be what I'd do. And I think there was a second question as well, Sean. Kenwin again?
Yeah, Kenwin Jones asked, are Belfast the team to beat after Panthers wobble and Belfast playing 21 of their away games already at this stage?
Aaron? What are you thinking?
Looking at the league table, I think that, Panthers... No, obviously, they know how to reach it. Anything could happen, but you know they're a lot further down than where they were before the Christmas break. So, I think it's not just Belfast you've got to worry about as well. You know, Fife are running away with it. I think if they win their games in hand, no, I lied. They can't. No, they can't. But there's a couple of teams that you know, like Belfast. Fantastic team. Sheffield, they're on a 5-game winning streak of their own, and Moose is having bar the game against Manchester last night, Moose is having an absolutely outstanding couple. You know, he got the elite league record for shutouts. So there's a lot of teams in that top five that, you know, could knock us off a top spot. And I think as long as we continue winning, I don't think the streak's going to last forever, obviously, but as long as we continue winning, and even if we do lose, we bounce back straight away, I don't see why we have to worry about any of the team. As long as we can, as long as we worry about ourselves, play our game, play how we've been playing the last couple of weeks, you know, we should run away with it again this year.
Oh, Jesus. I don't like Aaron talking about things. It stresses me out, words like that. it's, you know, and absolutely no disrespect to Fife, because if they won their four games in hand, they'd go a point behind us. But you're taking that out. It is a 6-point lead at the moment over Belfast, with Nottingham, if they won their games in hand, level with them. So it's an interesting one. Nottingham seem to be coming a little bit back into form. They've had a couple of wins, at, you know, all cross-conference, I think, since their 9-0 aggregate loss to Sheffield over the Christmas games. I'm not convinced whether or not that massive run of home games is going to be a good thing for Belfast. It's, you know, it's not a fortress. It's not like it's a loud, intimidating place. It's not like they've got 20 games out of 25 or whatever it is in the big blue tent where teams hated going there. You know, other than the flying, it's a nice place to go for teams. They get good facilities. You know, the hotels are all pretty close. And as a rule, there's not a lot of noise in Belfast. It's not the loudest of rinks. So, you know, is complacency going to set in with the home fans? And that's going to get worse. I'm not a big fan of home doubleheader weekends, and they've got a lot of them coming up. So as a fan base, it's going to be difficult, and whether that rubs off on the home team. And while Sheffield are further back, I refuse ever to write Sheffield off. They're,
absolutely.
They're a team that know how to win when they need to win, I think, is the big thing. But as much as, you know, as Aaron said, we are in the commanding position. We're in the position that every other team in the league would absolutely love to be in. It's not like in previous years where we've had points, but we've played more games. This season, again, with the exception of Fife, we're level on games with the teams that you'd expect to be there at the end of the season. And we've got that 6-point lead anyway. So I think, I wouldn't want to pick who's going to finish the highest out of Belfast, Sheffield and Nottingham at this stage. While it's a total cop-out answer, that's what it is. Sean, for you, is it Belfast you're most worried about, or?
It really is difficult to say, because out of the three teams, I think that Nottingham are the better side out of the three that are challenging. But Belfast do have all those home games, which is, I completely agree with what you said as well, Paul. I don't see that being that massively big a deal. And I also think that they struggle with their discipline still. I still don't think they've worked that completely out of their system. They're a very Adam Keefe team, which is by no means a bad thing, but I don't know.
Is the four-man system going to hurt the most?
Pardon me?
Do you think the four-man system refereeing out of the top teams, will it hurt Belfast the most?
Possibly. I don't know. I've only seen Belfast, I think I've seen Belfast twice this year. Once when they beat us at home, and another one I went over there and we beat them, and we played a solid game, but we shut them out.
Interestingly, sorry, while you're talking about the games, the two games that we've played to Belfast in Ice Arena Wales, I've felt they've been the two poorest performances I've seen from Nottingham, Sheffield and Belfast this year. Yet they managed to win both of the games. So,
yeah.
You know, it annoys me when I look at, like, results of what's happened, that
yeah.
I think both of those games happened while we were not in any sort of form. We only took a point from them.
I think as well, it does, you mentioned their double headers. They've got four double headers in 5 weeks, or three in 4 weeks or something like that. You know, they've got to play us, Nottingham, Sheffield and Coventry. So yeah, they've got four double headers in 5 weeks against you know, I think Coventry is, you know, a bit of a weekend off for him, but, you know, that's just me being mean at Coventry yet again. But Nottingham are going to go there looking to, you know, rough them up and take some points. Sheffield are going to want to get on a bit of a streak and try and claw their way back up. I, like you, Paul, I don't ever write Sheffield off. They're not out of it yet by any stretch. They've got a long way to go if they do want to win it. But so have we. It's still really, really early days before we can look at, you know, what's going to happen. I think come after our doubleheader, after Belfast have played, you know, Sheffield twice, Nottingham twice, and us twice, I think then we'll have a much better idea of what needs to be done for us to go the distance and which team is going to pose, you know, the biggest threats, so to speak. I do think Belfast are a good side. I don't know if they've quite got it in them to win the league title under Adam Keefe's first year. I don't know. I think all those home games is a long, even if it's going to be a lot of hockey for them in a very short space of time, even though it is at home, it's a lot of hockey. And we've got the same problem with our schedule. We talked about it off air. We've got a really, really busy couple of months. I don't know. Are they the team I'm most worried about? No. Nottingham are, personally, still. And they are making the statement of going out and making changes. They released Josh Schaller. I think they're looking at bringing a couple of bodies in as well. So Nottingham are the team that I'm most worried about, still. But then I think we're so good that we are such a good side that, I don't know, I just, let's focus on us.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And the one little point that you made about Adam Keefe going into the run, obviously he's up against three coaches that have all won the league previously. And, you know, we saw with Andrew Lord that it's difficult to get it done that first time. You know,
you go close, but it's hard. It's real hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's not as a disrespectful thing to Keefe, but just, is the way it is. Excellent question. Thank you, Kenwin. But yeah, I don't think we can claim that there was a single excellent answer in there. We've talked around it.
We've all copped out quite well at that one, I think.
To be fair, other than Aaron, who's just said, we're going to do it. You know, Aaron's done an Aaron and gone hard.
Double baby.
The most up and, I think you're possibly the most up and down hockey fan I know, because I'm sure.
I completely concur with you.
But we wouldn't have you any other way, Aaron. We would not have you any other way.
Absolutely not.
So thank you to Anthony and Kenwin for the questions.
Keep them coming.
Yeah, keep them. We love them. We haven't got to think about what to talk about. You're doing the work for us. That's not why we love them. It's always good to have you know, things to talk about that we know people want to hear discussed as well. So you can come in, and you know, if you've got any thoughts on who you think the team to beat this year is, just send them over on Twitter. We'll retweet them and we have a bit of a conversation going about that as well. So this weekend, we seem to be playing Guildford all the time coming up. We've got the first game of 3 in 8 days against them on Saturday as we travel to the Spectrum. For the first time in league action, we've obviously been there once in the league and lost. Once in the Challenge Cup groups and lost, and once in the first leg of the Challenge Cup and drew 3-3. So be nice to get the full house and get the win on Saturday. Obviously, don't do a webcast, but Sean, I believe there's a play-by-play come in, and it's not just a play-by-play.
It's not just a play-by-play.
What is it then, Sean?
It's quite possibly very merry Sean play-by-play.
It's a drunk play-by-play, everybody.
They're always the best.
And I'll stand next to Sean and make sure I'm a really bad influence and, you know, try and get some
comedy.
Some tweet that Sean wouldn't like to... Yeah, some comedy, because Sean's not very good at comedy. That's only an hour and a half.
No, that's why I'm here.
I'm just here for the sense.
I'm here for a good time.
You're here for the party. No Aaron, no party.
Exactly.
But Aaron, regardless of play-by-play, a team that can't be underestimated this year, Guildford, they're sitting fourth in the table, you know, on merit. They've already beaten us. a difficult game and the potential for some bad blood after the way the Challenge Cup first leg ended with a bit of a late hit on Hotham, according to reports.
Yeah, I think this one could turn out to a feisty one. Hotham, he's not the one. I'm not sure if like they describe him as one that holds bad blood, but I think he'll be out to seek retribution for like the bad hit on him. And you know, Guildford, they've got Kayla Ackard, I think his name is, D-Man, absolutely tearing up the points. There's another guy, John Dunbar, absolutely ripping it up. You know, so they've got goal scoring abilities and things like that. So if I drive up, I think it's not going to be a game to miss. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to this one. I think at the moment they're the only team that we've really struggled against. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've beaten them.
I think we beat them in overtime in the group stages at home. So
I remember that one actually. Sorry, but yeah,
another close game. Spot on.
So
didn't we beat them? Didn't we beat them on a Friday game as well? The one that I missed the first period of, 8th of December.
Was that a league game?
But
it was. Said, tell a lie. Yes, sorry, we did. I completely forgot we'd already played them in the league, but. Well, we haven't beat them in the Spectrum. We should have stuck with that.
Yeah. I'm just here for the sense, like I said.
Yeah, but it's not a team that we go out and, you know, it's not like,
we don't
beat them comfortably. You know, it's always a competitive game, and I think Saturday night is going to be exactly the same. And you know, it could be the time where our fantastic streak could come to an end, or we could extend it by another one.
And sort of. The two games we have played in the Spectrum so far this season, obviously a loss and a draw, but they've seen 18 goals. So I think we can probably expect a 0-0 draw based on that. 18 goals, so a bit of bad blood. You know, what more could you want?
It's going to be a cracker, I think.
And there's a Wimpy as well. Yeah.
Food.
Grunt, Wimpy and Phil, Sean play-by-play. You lucky, lucky lot.
I really do think it's going to be a cracker. And shame that there's not a webcast. So if you've got a way to get there, get there. I think there's literally one or two seats left on the Red Army Travel Bus. It's not an episode if I don't mention a Red Army Travel Bus, so I had to squeeze it in. But after that, it's another big game. And the resurgent Panthers... Sean, I think their first conference game since their slump, and one they're definitely going to want to look to put a marker down and say that they're not out of this title fight, that they are still the team this year.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, they obviously lost to Sheffield twice over Christmas, which hurt them. And since they've started to pick themselves back up, you know, they're going to want to, like you said, set a marker down where what better team to do it against than the leaders? They've got to chase us down if they want that league title. They have a good goalie tandem, I think. On the whole, they do have quite a good roster. I'm surprised that they let Josh Schaller go. I thought that there would be other players that they'd let go before him. I don't think he's been that bad when he's played against us. I think this is one which is going to be really interesting because it's going to be the first game, I think, against Nottingham that... Andrew Lord is coached from the bench. Correct me if I'm wrong. This season.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he has definitely done one in Nottingham in the past, but I'm interested to see on how this one goes coaching wise, because whenever we play Nottingham or lose to Nottingham, it's not only because they outcoach us, because Andrew Lord is, you know, doing his thing on the ice and we miss things and we don't adapt to game situations. And I think this is going to be a real good test to see of how far Andrew Lord has come in terms of a bench coach against arguably the most successful bench coach in the Elite League ever, with the amount of trophies that Nielsen's won. So this, I'm really, really looking forward to this game, regardless of how Saturday goes. This is a game which, you know, we win this and it's another big one adding to the streak. And if we lose it, then, you know, momentum, all that sort of thing. Every game is huge, but this is another one. We're in for a really, really, really good weekend.
Yes, definitely. And Aaron, the two games we played at home to Nottingham whilst they were performing well in the CHL, getting good results in the league, have been quite comfortable victories, 4-1 and 6-2 over Nottingham, which I don't think is a fair reflection on them. So interesting, a bit of a different dynamic this time, Aaron, with them coming in, you know, looking to prove a point rather than on the back of a good run.
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, they when we've beat them, like you said, they've been the comfortable team. They've settled and things like that. So now everything's going to be up in the air. Corey Nielsen's going to have made some changes and maybe said to a couple of players, be like, look, if you don't perform, then on your bike. So it could be a completely different Nottingham team that we see on the weekend. Maybe a more aggressive team. I think it's going to be one to look forward to. I think. I don't know what to say. I'm not looking forward to that one. I think if we beat Guildford Saturday, it's going to take a lot out of us. And I think Sunday could be one that we'll fall short on and we'll struggle a bit against. But I'm usually Mr. Optimistic, but I'm not about that one.
It's quite good that you're usually Mr. Wrong as well, then.
Ooh, shots fired.
What I should have said, an excellent couple of games coming up for the Devils, and be good to keep that run rolling. But yeah, I think whatever happens, that I think people got the negatives when we were losing earlier in the year. We were losing multiple games on the bounce, and over the last couple of seasons, we've not really done that. I don't think we probably lost two on the bounce in the last couple of seasons at all, or more than two on the bounce anyway. So, you know, the loss is going to come at some stage. Law of averages says so, but I think it's just about bouncing back as soon as possible afterwards. And you know,
we said that in the world record year as well, though.
I don't think we can actually have it, can we? Because of that draw in the middle will count against us, because it's all competitions. But you know, I'll take 22 wins in the league on the bounce and not having a world record, if I'm honest. I'm not too fancy. But we've still got it, because the other team never actually claimed their record, even though they beat it. So it is still our world record.
But where's the banner? Where is the banner?
Where's the Guinness World Records banner? wherever. Or Reagan left all the other stuff from the rink. So that's the weekend that's coming up. It's going to be a great weekend, and we hope you'll tune in next week to listen to our thoughts on both of the games. Thank you for listening. Thank you for everyone sending questions, Ramites, and please make sure to get them over to us this weekend. But from Sean, Aaron, and me, thank you for listening. And that is your Red Army Roundup.